So reading the face, this is courtesy of John Muir. He is someone who actually doesn't believe in cephalometrics, who doesn't believe in anything other than to be able to get a sense of what is going on with someone's face. And so, he looks for clues such as bags under the eyes. He'll look at how far the incisors are away from the nose to give a sense of how much vertical growth there has been. He looks at whether the incisors are crowded or aligned. He likes to look at the forehead, so the frontal bone, as a major reference point. And he found that you can use different things in the face to help us interpret how the growth will become better or worse as time passes. The resting posture of a child is critical to their growth and development. When we are looking at a mouth that is open more often than it is closed, there is enormous vertical component to the growth. When the mouth is closed, as opposed to open, there's enormous forward AP development relative to the vertical component. We tend to hide the amount of vertical that we have by compensating with an upward tilt of the chin to bring it forward, and that opens up the airway, but you end up with a very slopy forehead. He likes to gauge the height of the dimensions of the nasal bone relative to the zygomatic bone. The size of the nose, the straightness of the nose, is also a result of how much vertical growth there has been in the face versus horizontal growth. Nasolabial angle is very important. The closer we are to a right angle or even an acute angle, the better forward growth there is. And the more obtuse the angle, the more vertical the growth there is. All right, so we can tell a lot by the photographic imagery in the standard images that we take. He likes to use something called the indicator line. I teach it, but it doesn't bother me if you guys use it or not. But it's a simple way of getting an understanding of how much vertical growth has kind of lapsed. And it's effectively from the tip of the nose to the incisal, the front left incisor, he likes to use. And that tip needs to run from the tragus across. So ideally, it should be 28 at the age of 5, increase 1 mil each year until puberty, when it should be 38 for an average size boy and 36 for an average size girl. So a quick guide is to add 23 to their age for a boy and 21 for a girl. And so he's got this table to show that the smaller the indicator line, the better the growth is tracking. So it's less critical as far as what you guys are needing to do, but it's something that we do in orthotropics, which is when we're trying to deal with significant vertical growth issues. Right. Ideally, the face should grow forward, but if the mouth is open, it grows more vertically, or it has a rotation that is clockwise, or a backwards rotation. So this is the ruler that he developed. And the MyoMate that we introduce you to actually has this ruler built into it. So basically, the greater the distance from the incisor to the tip of the nose, the more vertical growth there has been, and the more likely there will have been some form of malocclusion. All right, and then of course, when we treat these children, we're trying to reduce that indicator line. So one of the things that we have misdirection in the viewpoint is that we think that class two division two patients in particular have very retruded maxillas. And the division ones have a very protruded maxillas, but when you take the measurements, you realize that everyone is retruded. We know that if there's crowding early on, if the mouth is open early on, then the growth cannot compensate because growth is compensatory to the resting posture. So people think, oh, won't they just grow a stronger chin, right? Because the mandible grows at a different time to the maxilla. And the answer is yes, but the mandible will grow in the direction that it's pointed. So if it's a mouth closed position, then yes, the chin will come forward. But if it's a mouth open position, the chin will go down. And if it goes down, it tends to go back. We can see clues very, very early on. And the teeth can sometimes compensate, and the malocclusion can be acceptable. But always the face tends to track down and back. If you hang your mouth open a little bit, it will give you an acceptable occlusion, but if you're always open a little bit, your chin will tend to grow down and back. We know that small changes in posture can make big changes visually in how a face grows. So John uses himself as an example. He had his mouth open his entire life, and his face grew long. So this is dolichofacial. All his kids he taught to stay closed. But he treated because we live in a world where kids hang their mouth open. And you'll see that the oldest ones follow him more than the younger ones because he worked out posture by the time the younger ones were at that age. He uses what we call the lower indicator line as well, which is again a measurement of where the incisor is relative to soft tissue mentone. And it's useful for helping us determine class threes in particular. If we treat according to his indicator line, we can make in very large changes that correct the growth pattern if we do it early enough. The cheek line gives us a sense of how strong the zygomatic arch growth is. And zygomatic arch growth is important because the zygomatic is directly above the key ridge. And the key ridge is the bone that envelops the 6-year-old molars. So the stronger the chewing force, the more prominent the zygomatic bones tend to be. So as a general view from John Muir is that the nasal bone should run roughly parallel with the zygomatic arch. And the flatter the zygomatic bone, the more likely you'll have a vertical growth. And it's literally how much time do we have the 6-year-old molars in contact? And the cheekbones, his view is everything wrong stems from the maxilla. If you correct the maxilla, a bulk of the aesthetic issues and structural issues is addressed, probably more in proportion, more out of proportion. So we're taught in orthodontics to evaluate the profile, and we have a tendency to like flatter faces. Whereas our goal in order to fit more things is to have a more prognathic face. But we want a prognathic face that is proportional in all componentry. So we want full lips, we want an acute nasolabial angle, we want lips in line with each other, we want the chin point and the start of the nose to be roughly in line, we want the nose to have a straight line, and we want both jaws in front of the forehead. That gives us a very different spatial development internally for all the structures. The more prognathic the jaws, the more likely everything fits. But if the proportion is correct, then it looks harmonious. So a lot of the Cephram metrics are developed to provide profiles that are very flat faced. And what John realized is that his ideal development is very prognathic, but it's bimaxillary prognathic. Whereas we in orthodontics tend to aim for a kind of Steiner norm, which is literally forehead, upper jaw, lower jaw, all roughly in a straight line. Whereas John likes a class three that has a really big maxilla, so that gives it a super class one relationship. And you'll find that the most attractive people and are the same ones who have straight teeth naturally and have room for all the structures. They have this kind of facial form. So we saw what looked good in that little girl. And if you draw a picture of a beautiful young woman, it's the same structures in the same proportions. When we have malocclusion, it casts a different imagery of what we believe to be the character of a person. We can go into as much detail as, how much sclera is showing under the lids, above the lids of the eye. Why does that show a potential sign of distress or lack of health? It's underdevelopment of the maxilla. People say, well, why have we got bags or darkness underneath the eyelids? And I think John mentioned that, well, The flow of blood back down through the carotids has to pass through the maxilla region, and the same volume of blood has to pass through. And if you've got a big maxilla, then it's all contained within the skull. And if your maxilla is underdeveloping, then that excess blood kind of flows out, and then you get the venous pooling. It's just a theory he mentioned. And his reasoning was when he develops the maxilla, he improves the structure around the eyes as well. Muscle bulges are really important to consider. Big buccinators are only good for infants who have no teeth and who must feed with their lips and their cheeks and their tongue. Children or adults with big buccinators always have squashed in posterior teeth because the cheeks are competing for space with the teeth and the teeth lose. Adults who have hollow cheeks usually have excellent control of their oral functions and they grow really well. Lip seal is the thing that we are most obviously aware of in posture, but we have to remember that lip seal is something that everyone tends to learn about in their teenage years. And even children who have hung their mouth open for the first 10 years of their life tend to aim to seal their lips later on in life. But just because they seal their lips doesn't mean that their posture is optimum because their jaws may still be wide apart, their teeth may be apart, their tongue may still be in the wrong position. We tend to find that lips that are sealed naturally with good posture are full and even. And when lips are uneven in their form, we know that the mouth internally is always open. The lips may be in contact, but the teeth are apart and their tongue is off the palate. The amount of lip seal or posture in children will have a massive impact on how they grow. The mandible, after the age of 18 months, is predominantly driven by environmental factors of the posture. The mandible changes its shape to allow us to maintain whatever posture that we are holding. When we are looking at how someone speaks, we know that people who have good posture in between their words seal their mouth shut. We know that people who have bad posture, when they're speaking, their mouth is almost always open, like it never really closes at any point. And then tongue posture we went through previously, a lot of it is literally related to how much time do we spend with our tongue on the palate. If we spend it a lot of the time with the tongue on the palate early on in life, then the palate is stimulated to grow to alter itself to the shape of the tongue. If we drop our tongue, our palate drops because the molars over-erupt. And the more they erupt, the more crowded we get because the more vertical there is in the system. And the more vertical there is, the less room there is for all the pieces that are in place. The tongue ends up between the molars or under the occlusal plane, and then you get perfect class one, a little bit of class one crowding, more crowding, a class two division two, a class two division one, a class three low angle, or a high angle. So the tongue is the primary organ of the mouth. And where the tongue lives, the mouth grows around it. So if your tongue is down, depending on where the tip is, depending on where the base is, the jaws will adapt themselves to allow you to hold that posture. Your nasal patency and your swallow pattern all kind of stem from whether you have obstructions and how you eat your food and how you swallow your food. Those who have reasonably good occlusion, whenever they swallow, their tongue squashes up against the palate. Those who have bad occlusion, they never swallow with their tongue to the palate. And so he worked this out using denture paste. Denture indicator paste. So he treats children by correcting their posture, by correcting the structure that allows them to correct their posture, and then enforcing that to be the norm. And we can take children who, I mean, what would we normally do? What would orthodontics normally do? We would pull the top back to meet the bottom, and then you have a perfectly flat face. But that only allows you to have so many teeth and so much tongue in the mouth. Whereas if we bring everything forward, then we get more room for everything. And when you've got more room for everything, then the balance is better and it tends to look better. So he treats every malocclusion by bringing everything forward. Like he literally treats every malocclusion by bringing it forward. So he'll procline the front teeth and then he will stimulate mandibular growth by holding a strong posture. But this process is reserved for skeletal malocclusions. And it's a very long-winded process that requires an enormous discipline because we're trying to change someone who has very bad posture to someone who has very good posture. So we have to unravel the structure that has developed as a compensation of the bad posture, and then we have to enforce really, really strong posture. And so it's not something that I teach, in postural orthodontics, because the energy and effort and the skill sets required are enormous to change a skeletal malocclusion. So we focus on dental malocclusions and very mild skeletal malocclusions. And we can use the technology of the expander appliances and my exercises to correct mild skeletal malocclusions, and even severe dental malocclusions can be corrected. Because the posture for these children is mild to moderate. And retraining with exercises after developing transversely in young enough children can overcome these issues. Whereas if you're dealing with older children or dealing with more severe malocclusion, The technology that's available in postural orthodontics, my program, is not going to resolve or cure the problem because the problem is too great to resolve without using quite significant technology that is part of the orthotropics program. So, what are the key points that John uses? He likes to know the indicator line. Because he doesn't use any cephalometrics. He actually only uses about four photographs: a front-on view, a profile view, and a retracted smile and a retracted profile. That's all he uses. Like, he's literally just four photos and a ruler. If we do that in our orthodontics, we are not meeting the standard of care. And if we don't meet the standard of care, if anything goes wrong, we're screwed. So, because the basic philosophy is so obtuse from what is accepted in orthodontics, I don't teach it. I don't teach orthotropics. I teach postural orthodontics, which is evidence-based. But it's more limiting to what you can actually treat. But as relative newbies, like, you really should be treating only those you can finish well. Right? Like, who wants to do a third molar endo? Right, there are people who can do this. They're endodontists. And if the patient really wants it and they want to preserve that third molar, you send them to the endodontist. Right? There's no reason why you should do anything other than, get them out of pain and then refer them on. Because you just don't have that skill set. Or who wants to retreat and with a broken file? Right? You can have a go, but are you doing the patient a service if you can't get that file out? Okay, my screening is very different. My screening process. Oh, sorry, I can. We're stopping now.
Sorry, you finished screening?
Yeah, I'm finished the reading the face, and we're doing screening
Okay,
now.
let me just stop.